And in watching them through the, you know, this last 13 years, you know, from press reports and from, you know, reading industry publications, I would have said that, yes, that they seemed quite unapologetic and nearly resentful in their handling of the criticism, which doesn't seem like it helped them. It doesn't seem like that necessarily was an aid to their business. But, you know, you mentioned that you know, they tried to consolidate not just radio, but consolidate with the concert business and with a billboard business. Is that what did them in, or was the problem even bigger than that?
Well, I think it became bigger than that because, you know, as you said, and I experienced this in the process of dealing with them during the writing of my book. There does seem to be a you know, for a communications company, they do seem to have a real blind spot towards the press. And I know from having talked to a lot of insiders there that even a lot of the big press that they've gotten over the years, even when it's been positive, they've not been appreciative of it. I mean, I think their feeling has always been that, you know, we're running our own business and why should anybody care what we're doing? But of course, you know, they're involved in a culture that, and, you know, media that is, you know, owned by the public to some degree. I mean, the airwaves are owned by the American public, and, you know, that's something that they, I think, sort of forgot about a long time ago, or certainly didn't take with any seriousness. And in addition to that, I think that they, you know, they just miscalculated things on a whole variety of levels. And they haven't really changed over time. Mm-hmm. And even to the degree when the commercial radio business is in you know, a lot of trouble, not just because of anything they've done. You know, I mean, the advertising market is not doing very well right now. You know, they. A lot of people have said to me, you know, over time that what Clear Channel does is really guides what the radio industry does. And, you know, the fact that they went from being a public company to being a private company and now are getting smaller and smaller is having a big effect on a lot of other companies as well.
But the story of Clear Channel's descent, I mean, is not just a matter of, you know, the radio ad market declining, although certainly that didn't help. I mean, they got themselves into quite a bit of debt, didn't they?
Yes. Well, yeah. In the latter part of when I was writing the book, and thankfully, while I was still writing the book, they engaged in. Essentially, their stock price was stagnating for a number of years. In the late 90s, when they were doing really well, their stock was one of the highest performing stocks on Wall Street. And but in recent years, they've really had trouble getting it to do anything, even as they did a lot more cost cutting and you know, came up with all these you know, selling off the concert business or spinning it off and turning it into Live Nation, which is made its own kind of name for itself now. And
and it's not necessarily any more popular.
No, not anymore. But it is meaningful to note that even they knew they couldn't keep calling it Clear Channel Entertainment. they knew that the name needed to be changed. They really had the stock price stagnated, and then from there, you know, a lot of people would argue that they tried to come up with a way to enrich themselves further, and so they engineered this private equity deal, and had trouble getting it to go through. It took them almost two years for it to happen. A couple of private equity firms, you know, leveraged them up with debt, and they were able to go private. And now the company's doing even worse.
But it's under the same management, isn't it?
It's under the same management, but you know, their corporate debt ballooned because of the deal. And you know, I mean, I've heard all sorts of rumors about you know, their financial future at this point, but essentially this deal, which, you know, still to some degree is enriching the Mays family, is certainly not enriching the company, and you know, they're in real trouble.
Now, kind of and bundled into this, you know, we have a figure who also seems to have benefited quite a bit from Clear Channel, who is not a member of the Mays family. And I don't know if you can say something about Rush Limbaugh.
Rush Limbaugh.
You know, who joined the Clear Channel family in in the 90s. And you know, most recently we've heard a lot of talk on a lot of conservative talk radio, Rush himself crying about how you know, Obama and the Democratic Congress want to reinstate the fairness doctrine, which was a piece of policy at the FCC, which required, you know, basically a right of reply, and that they want to do this in order to you know, squelch people like Bill O'Reilly and people like Rush Limbaugh, and a lot of liberals do sort of place the demise of the fairness doctrine in the during the FCC of the first President Bush's administration,
right,
as the tipping point which created the Rush Limbaugh, but you know, it seems to me that it's really more to do with his association with Clear Channel did a lot more for him than the fairness doctrine could have.
Well, it's interesting because I mean, of course, Clear Channel didn't create Rush Limbaugh. He became an employee of Clear Channel when they purchased Premier Networks, which employed him. And of course, you know, most of the stars of talk radio are conservative, and that's a whole other discussion in itself why that is. But it is interesting to note that I guess it was about a year ago or so, Rush Limbaugh got a new contract, and I forget what the amount was. It was some outrageous amount. And, you know, Clear Channel at the time said, well, you know, this is what we, you know, need to keep Rush Limbaugh. And somebody pointed out to me after that where else was Rush Limbaugh going to go? I mean, who's going to pay him more than Clear Channel?
$400 million is his deal.
$400 million. I mean, radio is, in, you know, falling through the floor financially. Where was he going to go? I mean, they did prop him up in a bizarre way. I mean, the deal does seem strange because, you know, I don't know what – was he going to go to satellite radio? I mean, look at what happened to Howard Stern.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was the end of his career just
it
about.
It was the end of his career. I mean, he certainly made out financially, but, you know, if everybody can't hear you, no one can really be offended. If only your if only your true devoted fans can hear you, then what's the point? So it, you know, I think that, you know, and so then the question, I mean, you know, one of the questions that I always get asked about Clear Channel, because I think, you know, it's something that is legitimate to ask. I mean, the Mays family has been pretty open that they're Republicans, and you know, they certainly employ a lot of right-wing conservative radio hosts. But you know, is the company politically motivated? I mean, I did a lot of looking into that and talking to a lot of people, and I actually came out sort of perhaps surprising with the conclusion that I'm not convinced on the corporate level they are that. Politically motivated. I think they're very commercially motivated. I mean, I think they're all about money and they're looking for ways to make money, and they might, I think they certainly have a Republican worldview. So in fact that they sometimes are blind to things that, you know, in a more progressive or moderate world, some people, you know, there's just a total culture clash, I guess you would call it. But, you know, why is Rush Limbaugh so popular? I don't know. You know, or why is Glenn Beck, another Clear Channel employee, you know, continued to become popular? I mean, it might be a different argument.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I guess the way I look at it, or I was thinking about it, is that Clear Channel gave an instantaneous gateway to hundreds and hundreds of stations.
Right.
Right. And I'm not sure that, you know, and it's hard to kind of, you know, really completely suss it out, but I'm not entirely convinced that he had access to these hundreds of stations because he was already popular.
Right. No, I know what you're saying.
But that the access to those stations really did a lot to bolster his popularity. And that's not, you know, and I don't, you know, while I'm sort of politically opposed to him, diametrically opposed, you know, there is some degree of talent as a broadcaster in there as well.
It takes a lot of skill to be able to talk and for hours on the radio and keep people listening to you.
And to piss them off like he does. That's correct.
Right. No matter what you're saying. So, I mean, yeah, there's certainly ability there. Mm-hmm. And, I guess the answer that I tend to gravitate toward is that, I mean, I think people like Rush Limbaugh are popular in radio, partially because they appeal to a lot of people who listen to radio as it exists now.
Okay.
And also that, you know, we live in a largely progressive society, and you know, somebody like him, you know, I think is going against the tide and sort of attracts a lot of people in his wake. I mean, you know, to go back to the first part of my comment, I mean, I think what's happened during the Clear Channel era in radio is that they've lost so many listeners on the younger end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. I mean, young people in general don't listen to all these commercial radio stations because they don't play anything that's of any interest to them, or they just play the same old songs over and over and over again, and sooner or later they go elsewhere, whether it's to their iPods or to internet radio or to, you know, public radio, college radio. I mean, there are all sorts of other options many of which didn't exist when commercial radio first became prominent. And, you know, so they're playing to a lot of older people, I think. And maybe they're playing to a lot of older white guys who are driving in their cars a lot. I don't know, you know. So
and don't want to mess with this internet thing.
Right, and don't want to mess with this internet thing, exactly. So it's become a self-fulfilling prophecy in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that, you know, radio, by not progressing in terms of programming and distribution, has limited itself to an audience of people who may be more receptive to the messages of people like Rush Limbaugh.
Well, let's take up this failure to progress. I work here at a college radio station. I'm an advisor to the station here. And, you know, the students who work at the station who broadcast here readily admit that their friends don't listen because their friends don't listen to the radio and in many cases don't have radios.
Mm-hmm.
There are some who would argue that the fate of radio was sealed with the invention of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
There are others who might argue that instead, radio dug its own grave and that it had opportunities to progress in the era of the internet and other competition. And instead, big broadcasters, the great, you know, the biggest of which, Clear Channel, completely missed the boat. What's your take on that?
Well, I think it's a combination of factors, but I do think that, I mean, first of all, there's a very compelling argument for free radio. I mean, you know, regardless of whether people say they listen or not, they probably listen more than they even realize. You know, whether it's when they walk into a store and there's radio playing, or if they're in their car and they just happen to flip it on or whatever. You know, commercial radio is free, and that. That's compelling, and even if people say they don't own radios or whatever, you may think about it for a few minutes, and you might own more radios than you realize. You know,
right.
your clock radio, or your the radio that comes in your car, or they're kind of everywhere still. So there's that aspect of it, and I think the internet has had an impact, but looking not too far ahead into the future, I think we're going to see Wi-Fi built into cars pretty mm-hmm. soon. And at that point, it's a whole new landscape, because suddenly you can get any radio station you want in your car, and you can get all sorts of other stations, or whatever you want to call them, that aren't traditional radio stations. So suddenly, first of all, this makes satellite radio fairly irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was something I learned in the course of doing my book, that whereas I started out thinking that satellite radio was some sort of threat, I realized that satellite radio will be lucky if it's in business in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
The internet radio is going to happen one way or the other, because, everyone's going to be carrying around whether it's a smartphone or an iPhone, or whatever you have in your car or in your mm-hmm. your pocket, you're going to be able to listen to radio on it.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a digital signal, but it'll still be radio. And I think that, ultimately, as bad as things seem now, I don't think that commercial radio is going to go away, because again, there's that free aspect of it. And I think what you saw in satellite radio is that there was a big upswing in subscribers initially, but eventually it kind of plateaued,
mm-hmm.
because there are a finite number of people willing to pay, $12.95 a month to listen to the radio. I think that's different from, say, cable television. And so I think that radio will have to morph, and I try to be optimistic about it. I mm-hmm. think that as companies like Clear Channel are forced to sell off smaller, mid-sized stations, I think there are opportunities for smaller broadcasters to come in and try something new with content, because there are no other alternatives. You have to play something that somebody might want to listen to if you want to remain a going concern. And my theory is that commercial radio will persist and be aided by the internet in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the culture of commercial radio can play catch up and sort of roll with that, I don't know.
So you're saying it might be a little bit like what we're seeing is some innovation in non-commercial radio. We've seen, I think, NPR, for instance, take better advantage of the internet and to integrate it into it. And we see some non-commercial stations that are not public radio in a traditional sense, like KEXP, a music station in Seattle, which is non-commercial and affiliated with the Experience Music Project,
mm-hmm.
which has had an enormous internet presence from the day it went on the air. And as a result, sells, has underwriting, which is like advertising, sales agents in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And does actually events in Chicago over the summer during big music festivals. Do you think it's possible that commercial radio might take a card out of that deck?
Perhaps. I mean, one thing I wanted to add to your mention of NPR was that it's interesting to note that during this time when commercial radio was losing listeners, by the millions, NPR experienced an upsurge in listenership. Whatever that means, it might be an apples to oranges comparison, but I think that there is this sort of build it and they will come
mm-hmm.
kind of theory about it, that whoever is game to take a shot at it has a chance, because people are going to keep listening to music, people are going to want to keep hearing news, and I think that while certainly the internet provides a lot of those things, ultimately, what do you want to do while you're driving your car? Mm-hmm. You can't read stuff on the internet while you're trying. I hope you can't.
Well, I've
seen it a little bit sometimes. It is done occasionally, but but you know, not for long stretches. And you know, so I think that there are still reasons for people to listen to radio or whatever you want to call it, or oral programming. And so I think that that you know, whether it's EMP or somebody else, you know, putting new, another service I was thinking of was Pandora, which is, you know, for people who don't know, is the music service where you type in your preferences, whether it's a band or a song title, and it starts creating a radio station for you, and you can reject or accept what it chooses for you, and over time it will start shaping a radio station, admittedly without a DJ. I mean, it will be automated, but deliver some approximation of the kind of radio station you have in your mind. And, you know, there are other services like that, too, that, you know, are having, you know, are gaining a lot of new listeners. So, you know, that they're going to be in there, too. So I think the field's wide open. I mean, you know, it could be a very exciting time for radio.
It could be. It isn't if you're if you own radio stock right now.
Right. No. Exactly. I mean, this comes from somebody who's not in the business. Myself.
Right. Right.
I don't think I would feel that quite up.
But you know, I mean, you're making a case certainly for rate for the notion of it, exactly as you put it, aural programming, radio like programming. But do you think that a generation that grew up with the effects of Clear Channel and, you know, the demise of localism in that way and the demise of a connection, really, right? Of the idea that you could call the local station and maybe talk to the DJ and actually request a song and hear it.
Right.
Can they be brought back? I mean, and we're not talking just about, you know, the kids who are in college now,
right,
and graduating, but, you know, the kids who were, who are now, you know, still not even in school, who might, you know, otherwise have been listening to radio and wish for their own radio.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it could go either way. I mean, I see your point. I was on a panel at a college radio conference in New York a few months back, and was pleasantly surprised that, I mean, admittedly, these were college kids who were you know, passionate about radio to begin with, and they were involved in radio at their colleges. But there was a lot of enthusiasm and excitement about radio. I mean, maybe that once they try to get jobs in radio, they might not be as enthusiastic. but it, you know, I think, you know, another thing that I discovered that was a sort of a pleasant surprise in doing this book on Clear Channel was that there does seem to be an innate sense in the average American of all different ages and backgrounds, that there's something about radio that's important to democracy. And that really surprised me, because I figured, you know, commercial radio is kind of, you know, it's really in such a bad place in a lot of ways now. And, you know, a lot of people aren't listening to it as much as they used to. And there's so many other things competing for their attention, but there's, maybe it's because of, you know, some sense of history or whatever, but there's this understanding that, you know, that the FCC means something, and that, you know, if we don't have, you know, an open and a vibrant radio medium in this country, that there's something maybe a little scary about that. And that surprised me that people sort of sense that. And so if for that reason alone, I think that people will continue to try to find ways to revive it. And, you know, I have no nostalgia for, I mean, I've read a lot about it, and I've heard broadcasts of, you know, the wonderful FM stations of the late 60s and 70s, but that was a little bit before my time.
Mine too.
And you know, and I grew up listening to FM rock radio and stuff, and, you know, classic rock radio. I mean, those stations, if they still exist, play the exact same playlist that they did when I was a teenager.
Get
the lead out and all of that, you know. But at the time, you know, when I was still learning about stuff, it was a road into something.
Yep.
And so I think that, you know, in the same way that music is not going to go away just because the recording industry is in shambles, I don't think that radio is going to go away because I think that there's a community aspect to it. And if stations can revive it in a way that resonates with a community, and I think it has to start at the local community level, I think that, you know, there's always a chance because people respond to that, you know, particularly with music radio, I think, because there is a communal aspect to it. And, you know, if it's just that you want to check where your favorite band's going to be playing next week or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's sort of, you know, as you said, there's whether it's college radio stations or independent stations, and there do seem to be a lot more now than there were even just a few years ago. You know, there's sort of a cliche that everything in this country is the same. You know, that if there's a McDonald's in every town, so, mm-hmm. you know, every town, the country's been homogenized. But, you know, if you travel around the country, you realize pretty quickly that's not true in a lot of ways. And, you know, I think local radio stations that still exist and have a following locally are evidence of that.
Well, we'll have to leave it with that. Alex Foch, thanks for joining me. I really appreciate it. And thanks for the optimism.
Thanks, Paul. I felt very optimistic
today. we'll be talking to Jerry Caliano in 2 weeks. Jerry Del Caliano, who does Inside Music Media and a person who published a newsletter that eventually got bought by Clear Channel. And
yeah,
he's not feeling so optimistic at all. And your book is Right of the Dial, The Rise of Clear Channel and the Fall of Commercial Radio, now out on paperback. With Faber and Faber. Once again, Alex Foch, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Paul.
And that brings to a close this edition of Media Geek. Tune in next week when we'll have as our guest folks with the organization Radio Populares, who are bringing community radio, non-commercial radio, to the countries of Latin America and the people of Latin America. And in 2 weeks, tune in to hear Jerry Del Caliano, the man behind InsideMusicMedia.com, for his take on the demise of commercial radio. And of course, Media Geek is online at MediaGeek.net, home to the Media Geek blog, which you do want to read. Learn a little bit about pirate radio in Boulder, Colorado, tangling with the FCC most very recently. The radio show is at radio.mediageek.net. If you have any comments about the program, please send it to me, Paul, at MediaGeek.net. And of course, the Twitter feed is at twitter.com/MediaGeek. Thanks for tuning in. It's now about a minute after 10 p.m. here at WNUR FM, Evanston and Chicago's sound experiment. So we've got a little bit of sodium. I think we've got some bleach and some ammonia and some water. We're going to toss them together, see what kind of experiment we can cook up here with the part-time sucker. Stay tuned.